Mr. Ver, Reel 3. We're discussing the Home Guard that you joined, Mr. Ver. Were these the days of the parading with broomshanks? Did you get into that?
No, we started off with, as I say, with an armband, and then we got some a denim suit by the old fatigues. Then we eventually got rifles. I can't remember what type of rifles they were. It certainly weren't the Enfields, they were probably the Canadian P-38s, like that.
The old Ross rifle.
Ross, that's right, the Ross rifle, yeah. We did various exercises with troops. The training we had was mainly by, given by old soldiers that had been in the First World War. They got sort of priority as NCOs. They told us what they knew, which of course wasn't like trench warfare. There wasn't the right lot to teach you, was there? Well, keep your head down. And we went on various exercises, I'd say, with troops defending airfields and other places like that, you know. With it being munition factories and all that, we did sort of guards and that sort of thing on those. Apart from that, I can't say anything like that. But I'd say when, during air raids, which was nightly, for a long period of time. We used to report that, well, I used to report down to the engine shed, and jump on the roof and spot it and that type of thing. Never shot anything down. In fact, nothing with any ammunition.
We'd have drill nights when you learned basic drill, is that right?
We have drill nights, yes. With drill nights, we just went through basic drill, as you do in the army, more or less. Marching up and down a bit, a bit of field craft. As I said at that time, there was really no one to teach you a right lot because it didn't appertain what they knew. It was, as I said, trench warfare was totally different to what. I mean, you can't teach anybody trench warfare, only give them a shovel and show them how to dig a hole.
Did you dig trenches?
We did slit trenches, yes. Just a job getting where to dig them because you got into trouble if you didn't let anyone go up to, you know.
Were you in under a military discipline as a member of the Home Guard?
Well, you were. You were sort of a, like part of the Warwickshire Regiment, but you were under a certain amount of discipline. I can't remember really. It was only discipline, it's the fact that they had the command system, really. I don't think it was anything. It was sort of more casual for me. It was more like, as far as we were concerned, it was mainly defending the engine shed, you could say, or the railway, because several bombs were dropped actually on the shed and round about it. But as I said, there was nothing you could do about it, only had to fill the holes in it. That type of collect the when it exploded, there were quite a lot of incendiaries dropped which didn't go off, and you were able to pick those up, got rid of the roof, and get them out of the gutter, and all that type of thing. You did that when you sort of reported the duty. Right? But you're merely concerned with the engine shed.
What age were the recruits to the Home Guard?
Well, of various, as I say, I was 17. That was probably one of the youngest. I don't know whether that was the youngest limit, whether they took any younger than that, but it was from 17 up to 70, I should say. Yeah. Especially initially, because all the old men all wanted to join, you know. I suppose they were weeded out later on, you know, then past it. But there were various ages, as I say, from my age. Not a great lot at my age, actually. But
many of them, presumably, as you were overage for the army, Or we're on jobs that...
Well, that's right. Well, especially on the railway, because they were all exempt. It was a reserved occupation. In fact, men that had been initially called up as militiamen, right at the beginning, were brought back from the army back to the back onto the railway, the firemen and drivers, that sort of thing. So consequently, it was a reserved occupation. And I had to get special, you get permission to even go into the army. And,
was it a dad's army type of life? Was it as funny as that looking back on it?
No, we didn't do all the sort of things that they did, really. As I say, we'd been a railway company. It was mainly based just on the shed. You see, the thing is, with a railway, most times, half the men are working anyway, because the shed, on the engines, especially at that time, you could go to work and work 12 or 14 hours. And I didn't. I don't know, because I was younger, that would allow it, I don't know. But some of the regular, you see, I was never a regular fireman. As a past cleaner, we went as we were required. So the others, they were more or less, could be working, so you never got a full complement on a parade. So consequently, it wasn't the same. I mean, in the dad's army, they were all old men, weren't they? They were all retired, so they could all turn up every night, sort of thing. But in our case, it wasn't like that.
Did you get to fire your weapons at any time?
Yes, we used to go on the range. Yeah, we went on the range. We did a firing practice, but not a great lot. I don't think we had any automatic weapons. No, I can't remember any automatic rifles. Did a bit of bayonet practice as well. But we didn't do a lot of firing there.
Did they tell you what was expected of you if there was an enemy invasion, or what kind of role the Home Guard would have?
I can't really. No, I don't. More or less just telling to us that we'd be defending the railway shed, keep the railway running, really. You know, for, I suppose that was something that we could have done anyway, but. That was the idea, just to, with all good yards and all that type of thing, to patrol and, warehouses with the munitions and these new guards on there, those sort of things.
Was there any fear of Fifth Column?
No, I think so, yeah. Early on during the war, when they talk about nuns and all this sort of thing, but after that, it fizzled out, nobody seemed to take it seriously.
Were you ever called out to, so let's say, for parachutists or either scared or pilots that were shot down?
No.
Enemy?
No.
You didn't have any work like that to do? No. Looking back on it, do you think it helped you when you joined the army that you had this experience? You'd have the drilling aspect of it.
Drilling, yeah, but that's about all. Nothing I've ever compared with the day I've been. Yeah, you know, with the problem. It was sort of looked upon as a pastime, just you know, a commitment.
Dunkirk would have happened when you were 17, that age. What are your recollections of the effect of Dunkirk and on yourselves and people around you?
Well, it was looked upon as a, I know it wasn't a victory, but it was looked upon as such. I know it was a great effort that was made getting all the troops off. But there was no, can't say there was any thought that we were going to lose the war even then. I just thought it was a setback. You know, I don't think we realised what we were going to do after that, but it wasn't a matter of saying we've had it now or not like that. You just look upon it and you know, we won't lose like the British.
So the mood was still upbeat in the country.
Really it was, yes. You got a few laughs. My cousin, he came back. He was in the Duke of Wellington's, and they brought him back and they're putting in Manchester ability in Manchester Zoo, Bellevue Zoo, Manchester. And his wife went to visit. You know, she got to know his there. She had to pay. Pay to go in to see him. She had to pay entrance fee to get in time. Yeah, but. No, it was pretty upbeat. I can't remember Peter being. I mean, naturally, there was a lot of sorrow for the men, a lot of men killed there. And there's pictures of them coming off the ships and wounded and that sort of thing. But I don't think it put people down on the floor there.
The cinema again would no doubt be playing a role now of propaganda role in
effect. Well, we told news and that sort of thing, really. Yeah, and it was all upbeat. Our lads, you know, it was all giving Hitler a smack in the eye. It showed you the Maginot Line and all the cheery lads, and you know, it was pure propaganda, of course. That cheerful, you know, you see them now, don't you? The old news, and you keep putting them on, playing the tune, and. Our lads are over there in France having a good time, and so that was in the Phoney War before it really got started. And it looked as though there were only a good time, but of course we knew later on that there were. But it was, as I say, on the pictures, on the news, you did get quite a bit of that, but it was mostly, like you say, propaganda to boost people's, people up there.
Had you been looking forward to becoming old enough to go into the army?
Oh yes, I wanted to go into the army. Yeah.
And obviously, your parents would be extremely reluctant,
yes.
Were they?
Oh yes.
Particularly with you, when you're in a reserved occupation.
That's right. Yeah, they thought it was okay then. That was all right once I got on the railway. Yeah.
So it must have come quite a shock to them. Did they know when you joined them, or did you do it without informing them?
No, I've been home. We've been lads, we having to sort of be away from home like that. We used to get a pass, free railway ticket once a month. So I used to come home once a month for a weekend and go back. And another chap from Bradford, who worked on railway with the staff at the same time as me. We both came home together. And we'd gone back. When we went back, there were two or three of the other lads who were local Birmingham lads. They joined up. And of course, that upset us because they'd joined up, you know. So we said, well, we'd join up as well. And so we just went one day. We said we'd go to the recruiting office. We went to the recruiting office in Birmingham and said we'd join the army. Wanted to join the West Yorkshire Regiment. He says, no, he says, I'm sorry, but they're full up. He says, they're full up, and we can't get in the West Yorkshire. He says, what about the Berkshires? I said, no, not fancy the Berkshires. He said, what about the South Staffers? I said, no. He says, they're at Mask. I said, oh, no, I don't know. Didn't matter where they are. I said, come back tomorrow, I'll try and get into Green Howards. He said, so I went by the following day and said, sorry, I can't get into Green Howards. I said, I'm silly now, don't it? You have the men they wanted. I said, we can get you in the KYLI. So I said, all right then. But I'm going to Yorkshire, isn't it? We can't get us into West Yorkshire. So that was it.
You said that, before we go on, you said they'd had to get permission from the railway people.
Yes, I had to. They said they'd accept me in the army, they'd take us. But then, we had to go back to our shed boss and get permission, get a release from him. We had to go in front of him in his office and say that we wanted to join the army. And he could have stopped us. But he said, well, if that's what you really want, I won't stand in your way. So, we added them. So he said, I won't stand anywhere. So that was it. Let us go. So we went back there for attestation and medical. And that was it. They got to the depot in New York.
At what point did your parents know you'd done this?
Well, I didn't we didn't go straight away, of course. I mean, they didn't say about go tomorrow. Probably a week or two to finish at work, and then we went home. I think we went home a couple of weeks after we finished work, and then we went home and then told my father then and my mother.
How did they take it?
Well, my father started crying, sort of shook him a bit, and he said, "Well, didn't you tell me, told you not to go in infantry? You know, should have gone into something else." Because, well, it's another story than that, but the lads that we joined with, that joined up before us for work, they finished up, they went into the Berkshire, but they finished transferred to the railway, Royal Engineers, railway operating battalion. But my father said, "You should have, I wish I'd have known you, I'd told you, warned you not to go into the infantry or something." I wanted to go into the infantry.
And your mother, how would she take it?
Well, she was very upset. But yeah, of course. Yeah, she was upset.
What date would this be?
This would be August 1941.
And you'd come by then, you'd, of course, in the Birmingham area where you were, you'd come through the worst of the Blitz.
Yes, it more or less turned off then. Yes.
And this was what you're describing before the bombing raid.
It was more or less every night at one time.
How were people taking it? You mean you were there in the middle of it all?
Well, they took it striking, sort of thing. I mean, I took my mother around to look around the following day after this airraid, and it shook her terribly. Because there was laying people out in the street to be picked up, you know, corpses that had been. Being in the shelter and being hit and that sort of thing. There were whole streets where the roof was stripped off, a landmine had dropped or something like that, windows out and all that. And my mother just upset her, she said, "You'll have to, if you can't stay, you'll have to come home, you know." So I can't do that right. When she came back here, they bombed Bradford that particular weekend.
So August 1941, you went to the base, to the infantry base depot.
Yes, number 6 ITC at Strensel.
How were you received? You've arrived at the gates.
Well,
what happened to you?
We set off from here, from home. Got the train to Leeds, changed at Leeds, to York. Two or three other lads were in the same compartment. They were from Leeds. They were going as well, so we all got talking. We got to the station at York, and there was a wagon waiting there, a corporal, waiting for us. We got us all in this wagon, and took us off to Strensley. First thing we had was a meal. The first thing we ever got was a knife, fork and spoon. And also we had fish and chips. It was the first thing I ever had in the army, was fish and chips. And that was it. That was the first. Then we all got allocated. It'd been a lot of militia men there on the initial call up. You know, there were a lot of missing, what they called militia blocks. They were actually proper brick barrack blocks. And of course, we should be one of those and sorted out. Yeah.
Can we have a look at the accommodation since we've reached it? You say there were a brick block.
Yeah.
How were they laid out?
It was just one long room, bunk side by side, cast iron stove in the middle, which you then put anything in, you had to get polished, and you'd no fuel anyway unless you went to the married quarters and things. So. And
how many men to a barrack, to a block?
They were in double bunks, maybe 40. I said a double bunk, so I'm going to be 2 weeks.
Where did you keep your uniforms and equipment?
I'm just trying to think. I think it was just on the bed. I can't remember having any lockers. I don't think any luck is. I think he just. I know he led all the kids out of your bed, which was rather awkward if he didn't have got both, because they're a bit like that, you know. They weren't really firm, and we used to swap over. This one I was telling you about that I joined up with.
What was his name?
Wilkinson, Albert Wilkinson, I called him. And we were in this, so we decided I'd have the bottom bunk 1 week and we'd swap over the following week. So then I'd finish about the top bunk 1 week and was good up through the night to go to the toilet. So I thought I was in the bottom bunk and fell off. But that was it. I'd say about 45, but I don't think we had any lockers. Yeah, you just had to. Your blankets had to be folded. Your name tag would even be on your blanket. And your blanket, I think you're 3 and that's 4. They had to be folded. So those name tags were perfectly in line, which took a lot of doing when you stood on the top. But, you know, it took you quite a bit to do that together, to get it all straight. Then the rest of your kit was laid out on the bunk itself.
That was in the usual army way.
Oh, yes. Knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather brush. Knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb, lather brush, button stick, button brush. I thought I also remember that bit. Then your boots, of course. Your pair of boots upside down, shoulder, soles, your vestings.
And was this a daily inspection?
Well, it's a lay them out daily. I don't think you got inspected quite regular, but you lay them out. That was more or less a regular thing. Yeah.
Who was in charge of each room?
There was a corporal. Corporal was in charge.
And where did he sleep in?
A bunk at the end, so in the like little room at the end, like a bunk that he was charged.
And where were the toilets in relation to the huts?
It was a separate block, separate toilet block.
So you had to go outside to get to it?
Yeah.
Whether it was through the night or whenever?
That's right, yeah.
And was that again a brick building? And
it was a fairly big building, yes, the ablutions and that, the washing facility.
The same place? Yeah. Keeping the room clean, how was that done?
Well, you all had to look in, but they used to, one of you in particular, at times had to stay behind and be responsible for the floor, which was just bare wood, of course. And that had to be kept polished with what we call a bumper, which is a big sort of a big block, with felt there to sort of go around level. You have to polish the floor with it, you know. And keep the store clean, of course. Bucket for the coal, which you know, but the bucket's not to be kept clean. The windows have to be clean, and all the inside have to be kept in general clean. And you're more or less are responsible
for your own space,
more or less, yeah. And then there'd be a cookie who'd be responsible for the floor. You have to take the turn.
Was there a table in the room?
I can't remember.
If any of your kit went missing, what happened then?
Well, if you didn't get text from the RCD, you were in trouble. it's a funny thing, that really, isn't it? I mean, if you lost a pair of socks or whatever, I mean, if you were nowadays, it'd be a terrible crime. You'd be frightened to death. What would happen to you because you lost a pair of socks? We know you're going to have to buy some more, but you also get put on the charge for losing them. You know, out of all proportion to the crime. You know, it was ridiculous, really. But that was discipline, wasn't it? Again, so I'd say you'd either get yourself from somewhere else, or you would in trouble.
Was there much stealing?
No. I didn't know of any, I'm not saying no stealing went on. I don't know of any of my own group that was having an issue with stealing.
Relationships within the group in the hut itself, What were they like?
They were very good. You tended to finish up with chats with your own sort of interests. If you went out, you're sort of orientated into the groups that way. And some people like one thing, some people like to do other things, and you sort of got into those groups. But in the barrack room itself, it was okay, you know, a few laughs, pulling legs, and all that sort of thing. It was okay.
Was there any bullying?
No, I didn't see any bullying, no.
No initiation ceremony like you hear about today.
No. Mind you, we're all new anyway. There were no old hands in our place. Except, bullying, it wasn't bullying, as far as bullying went. But there was an old soldier who used to come round. He was only a private. But he was on the permanent staff, the depot. And he had the service dress, cap, service dress, big cap, all that stuff. Smart as that one, wrapped out and get one of these. Can you get one of these? Yes, I'm getting one. £2, get one for £2. The other one, half of this one, just give him £2. Yeah. Every time we saw him, he wasn't, he was. Have you got those two? No, not yet. They're on the way of getting out of this warehouse. Another week or so. They're getting the empty gas, they used to be permeated. Impregnated with empty gas powder. So they're getting that taken out, Of course, this was near the end of our training. He knew that, he knew we'd be off any time to join the battalion. So he was sort of dragging it out. Anyway, I finished up, one of the lads went to a corporal, one of the permanent staff. And asked him about this. So of course they add him up, and we all got a £2. Got £2 back. A little happened to him. he didn't get away with it that far. But he must have done that with every intake. You see, get a few. You sort of got you the last 2 or 3 weeks of your training. You'd be away before before they could give you any suits.
We've been looking at activities in the block itself. Before we go on to your training, after your training was over and you were back in the huts, what did you do?
Well, you were cleaning kit, mainly. Getting ready for the following day. Webbing, cleaning up your webbing and your brasses and all that type of thing, boots. They keep changing their mind about whether it should be dubbing or highly polished. And you just get them highly polished and then they change their minds to be dubbing. Or vice versa, if they were being dubbing, then they're highly polished. Well, it's a hell of a job to get all that grease out before you could start to get them polished. So you spend a lot of your time doing things like that. You get odd lads that try to make a bit on the side and offer to do it for you for a few bob. It wouldn't be a few bob at that time. I mean, the pay was only the 7 shillings a week. Well, 14, but it was 7 for the mothers.
Did you have so much off your pay also for things that might be lost or
the
whatever?
The damages, yeah. Exactly. Probably a shilling or something like that. So maybe 65. Barracoon damages, yeah. Yeah, that were. I don't know if that was a Swiss or what it was. Right? I mean, even if you didn't damage anything, you still got it taken off. Although in some places they did damage. Yeah.